welcome to another interactive financial literacy event where you get to ask your hot financial questions. Do you feel like you cannot get ahead of your bills? Are you wondering if you're making the right choices for your ultimate success? Looking to buy a house? A financial consultant is the best person to talk to when you are setting your financial goals for the future. Jared Redfield is a millennial and well-versed in the world of tech salaries, benefits, retirement planning, and more specifically for those of you who are working in tech. And we're going to jump right into some questions. But first, Jared, can you just introduce yourself a little bit and talk a little bit about Tidemark?
Yeah, of course. I'll hopefully be able to fill in some of the blanks that you did a great job of already explaining. But yeah, I'm a financial consultant. And I think the best way to think of me is, you know, rather than just a financial advisor, rather than just that person who is managing investments, doing financial planning, all that stuff, is really being a personal CFO. Main reason for that is there's a whole lot more to this than just, you know, what's the hottest stock out there? You know, how do I make money quick? Like you mentioned, you know, is that cash flow analysis, like budgeting? Is that starting to dive deeper into your tax strategies? Is that, you know, going into other parts of your long-term plans, college planning? I mean, there are so many different areas that we touch on throughout our relationship and through our work. That's why I think using that term comprehensive really fills the billing a little bit better. But also, you know, I think this is where I would be remiss to not say that through our efforts with myself, with Tidemark, one of our main slogans is specialized advice for specialized careers. And that's a big reason why I'm a part of the Tech San Diego community. Really the main reason that I work with tech employees in general is that this is about as specialized as it gets, whether it's your benefits, your different types of retirement accounts or investment opportunities through your employers. And then you also have to match that with whatever you're doing on the personal side. So, you know, falling back on us, leaning on us to be that person in your corner to give that advice, understand your situation and see what that best path forward is for you is really what we're all about here.
Awesome. I really appreciate that. So I'm going to be asking you some questions and we'll get to as many as we can. And I'm going to start it off with my first question, which is what are the benefits or drawbacks to banking with a credit union versus a big bank, you know, like Bank of America versus Wells Fargo when it comes to, you know, their high yield savings or money market accounts? Are you really doing yourself a disservice going with a smaller bank or does it really not matter?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think one of the areas we've probably heard the most, you know, conversation about, which is very rare, because most other times when we talk about banks, it's rather, oh, how much do you have in your checking and savings? Is that your emergency fund properly funded? But with where interest rates are now and, you know, the type of yields that you can get from these money market accounts that they're offering, you know, it's actually a really great opportunity for the cash you have on hand. So to kind of get to that next part of the question there of, you know, are you missing out? Should you be in one camp or the other? I think it kind of comes down to what exactly it is that you're looking for. You know, I think this is also pretty prevalent because we saw, you know, just last year, some pretty serious concerns within the banking industry overall. So, you know, as of right now, I think that the differences are not that major, but I think it does come down to your service style preference. You know, with credit unions, typically, you know, this doesn't go across the board for either side, but typically you have a little bit more personalized service that's there. A little bit more local attention is another area that's there. So yeah, you know, I think at this point in time that the fields are actually pretty even. But yeah, I think it really does mostly come down to the service model that you're looking for. If you feel like you're pretty comfortable and don't need any sort of above and beyond attention or kind of details driven to your banking, of course, those national providers have been doing that forever now. If you do want a little bit more of that personalized relationship, you know, sometimes credit unions are able to provide that.
Gotcha. I guess the other question is, like, what about some of these digital-only banks? Are they going to be replacing brick and mortar institutions? And what are the pros and cons, like having like a brick and mortar savings and checking account versus like Capital One checking and savings? Or I don't know, I'm sure there's others.
Yeah, and this is where I think probably more focus should be driven. And I think this actually plays really well off of question number one. You know, with those bigger institutions, I feel like we're probably 95% of the way to being a digital only kind of relationship. I mean, most of them are integrating AI into their chats. You know, most of the time it's very difficult to get someone on the phone if you aren't, open to going to the actual location to sit with someone. So I think it's a very important kind of line in the sand that we're getting close to crossing. I think it's very impactful to have that backup option because, yeah, we've seen AI have a tremendous amount of growth. You know, just 6 months ago, it was, oh, we throw something into ChatGPT, we get a response, and that's incredible. Now we're getting, you know, thoughtful, detailed responses that seem human-like. So, you know, I think that's where it's still probably in the works. I wouldn't imagine that transition being across the whole banking industry anytime soon. But I think that really plays into the relationship you're looking for. You know, if you feel like based on your banking situation that you need some of that personalized attention, it would be very hard to see the brick and mortar establishments going out of business because, hey, they will always have people at the location. But if it's as simple as saying, hey, I'm looking to have where my check goes and that's it, you know, digital banking can actually be a pretty seamless process that you can end up using.
Awesome. You know, you touched on AI a little bit, and I think that's a huge question mark that's getting bigger and bigger every year as we dive into the regulations and ethics of using AI in some of these more volatile markets. I guess I have a two-parter. Artificial intelligence is being used to personalize financial services. And so what does that mean for financial privacy, for your privacy and finances and beyond? And then secondarily, is AI playing a role in the volatility of financial markets right now? And should people be investing in AI or should they be like watching and seeing?
Yeah, I think these are some things that I would say are absolutely undercovered with this whole AI narrative and kind of jump into the scene. Because one, this is actually a TechSD resource that was provided at one of the meetings. They were talking about the security and the construction really of these platforms. And, you know, if you're trying to do anything proprietary, if you're trying to do anything that should be confidential, there is an extensive amount of extra work that needs to be done to make sure that whatever AI source you're using is closed source. Because if it is open sourced, you know, not only is the code, you know, able to be public information, but whatever is being used through that code could also be potentially public information. So I think everyone involved on this meeting today would probably not want their personal details or financial details to be within an open source platform. So that's something that I would say is a concern, mostly for the fact that we just haven't really had AI driven for those necessities. So I don't want to sound saying, oh, AI is untrustworthy or, you know, isn't secure. I just don't think the focus or the attention has really been driven there yet. So, you know, that's also where I use AI pretty often. But if I do, it will never include personal information, private information, anything of that sort. So that's where I think the caution is right now. But realistically, probably shouldn't be the biggest hurdle for them to jump over, just based on how quickly it's continued to be innovated and pushed forward. So that would be really the answer for number one. But for that second part, you know, this is something where I think the shift is really starting to occur more now than ever. You know, unfortunately, I know you introduced me as the millennial here in the room, but, you know, So, you know, that's where I can kind of attack this with a little bit more of living in the here and now, not to say that the older generations aren't, you know, up to date, but I think there still is a little bit of that trepidation that they have based on going through the dot-com bubble and really the, let's call it 15 years after, where tech has always been this very aggressive sector for investments. And, you know, you throw AI in there with it being so new, that just raises the risk that much higher. Again, when I talk about risk, when I talk about aggressiveness, that doesn't mean that it's not quality. That doesn't mean that it's not something you should avoid, but it's just something you have to be okay with or understand what you're getting into. So what that transition to me looks like is, well, back in the day, you know, even 10, 15 years ago, the biggest companies, you know, outside of Apple, outside of Microsoft, were not tech companies. You know, we still had a lot of the industrials. We still had a lot of the consumer discretionary sectors paving the path in terms of market leaders and economy leaders. Fast forward to today, well, that is absolutely not the case. I mean, you go down the list, a majority of the largest companies are now tech companies. So I do think there is starting to be a balance in the scales in regards to, yes, you know, with the size of these large tech companies, some of that risk is starting to dial back naturally. It's not this innovative, fancy, not understood type of area. It's becoming kind of a staple of our life. You know, I think if we ask anyone here in this community or anyone in general, do we think tech is going to be more prevalent in the future or less prevalent? That's probably going to be 100% success rate of saying it will be more prevalent. So that's where I kind of look at it as we shouldn't be as nervous or think of tech as just a speculative or just an aggressive area because of those big players that are in there and have been really solidified over the time that they've started. But I would also be very remiss to not acknowledge, yeah, all the new companies, all the new AI players, all those other ones that are kind of in that middle category, you know, not the established companies, yeah, they're still going to bring a ton of risk, very aggressive. So it's a very various landscape. There's all different areas. It's just understanding where you fall in that and ultimately where you're putting money in that. So that's where I think the shift is really happening now. To where, gosh, you look at those main components of market indexes and a lot of it's tech. So to say it's now, you know, just an aggressive sector, I think is just incorrect.
What is I've heard something called the central bank digital currencies. Does that have any relevance in like regional tech investments or is that something that is for people on a broader scale who are making, you know, seven figures?
You know, it's an interesting landscape for the fact that it's, you know, I think when you kind of refer to this, a lot of people immediately jump to crypto, or even at this point, I think crypto is a little bit more established than what they're kind of proposing with that decentralized area.
Got it.
So, you know, I think it's so early that, you know, not only the legislature, the regulations, you know, the foundational pieces that need to be in play just haven't really been solidified yet. But obviously there's pros and cons to this. You know, I think the pros ultimately come down to what we look at as a lot more transparency, kind of a more even playing field versus having currency here, currency there. What are the conversion rates? All those different areas. But that can sometimes play a double-edged sword. I mean, let's think about the entirety of our financial system and its history has a whole lot to do with the differences of currency and those exact same pros that I just mentioned. So, you know, I think that's where, for the most part, unless you're in that field or you have an expert in that field directing you on it, it probably just doesn't make that much sense to really dive into that much. But I would also not be surprised if that kind of starts continuing to build traction based on some of the good ideas that it's bringing. But again, I feel like it is far too early to say, you know, a concrete yes or a no in the direction that it's currently on.
Gotcha. Yeah, for sure. I understand that. So shifting gears a little bit, we always hear in the news about how San Diego is one of the most expensive places to live in the United States. And and I understand how hard it is to, you know, buy a house in this nice little county of ours. And so what are some investment opportunities that are unique to San Diego that would be, either? Is it real estate, startup, local ventures? Is, you know, or is it just maybe, is it just one of those like money market or high yield savings accounts?
Yeah, well, I think that might be the first time, Sarah, I've heard someone refer to San Diego as a little county. So excuse me for my reaction there, but yeah, you know, this is a phenomenal area to really start looking at, for the fact that this is easily top three questions I get when meeting with prospective clients or current clients is, you know, how do I prepare myself to try and essentially climb this impossible hill of buying in one of the most expensive counties out there?
Yeah.
So, you know, this is where I think that kind of what you're leading on to in that back half of the question is something I really try to avoid more than anything else. You know, I think this kind of goes back to the very basic principles of investing, which is determining your time frame and then ultimately developing your portfolio or your investments off of that time frame in terms of the risk that you take. So it also does have to do with the perspective on this. You know, your time frame for retirement or your investing for retirement is going to be drastically different between how you invest for purchasing a home. So, you know, if you're looking at how can you get the most bang for your buck, or how you can turn your savings for that home into, you know, a much higher return, or, you know, putting it into something speculative like a startup. Well, yeah, there is always that potential where it skyrockets. And let's just say the down payment of 20% that you had, you know, doubled. Yeah, you know, that's an ideal scenario, but it is an incredibly unlikely scenario.
That's pretty impossible.
Yeah. So anytime that we talk about investing, you know, your savings for buying a home, it should be predominantly cash and money market, because you have the consistency. You don't have the volatility that comes with investing it into the market. Really, the only steps above that we look at would be fixed income tools. You know, we talked a little bit about this on our last Q&A. Those would be like CDs. Those would be like treasuries. That would be individual bonds or bond funds. Because despite those having some very minimal fluctuation in their value, depending on how long you hold them, they're typically paying you some interest or paying you some sort of income to hold that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where it's a very cautionary tale to say, if you think it's a great idea to take your $100,000 that you saved up for your down payment, or, you know, I should probably say closer to like $150,000 based on home prices here in San Diego, avoid throwing that into stocks or equity funds, because there's just so much risk that even though I'm pretty optimistic about the market now, we could easily see a 5%, 10% drawback or correction. Where do you really want to take that chance on your hard saved money that you've been probably working a very long time to get and see a 10% decline in that value? It's just not worth it.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's tax season. California specifically has crazy state taxes in comparison to other states. Yes. And I think what are some key considerations for financial planning, keeping those the tax rates in California in mind, especially in San Diego?
Other than buying a home, or, you know, the best way to do it, it is very rare that clients or prospective clients come to us to say, "Hey, Jared, all I want to know is about a retirement plan or investments." It usually is, how do I get more tax efficient or save on taxes?
Yeah.
So this is where I will take the time here to do the fun disclosure that we always have to do when talking taxes. I'm not a tax professional.
Right.
I don't give tax advice, but almost all of our work has to deal with taxable implications. So there's really a couple of ways that you can do this. First is understanding what type of accounts that you're using. You know, of course, retirement accounts are the tax advantaged accounts. So a couple of ways that professionals or the IRS code can refer to this are qualified accounts. So when we talk about retirement accounts or qualified accounts, usually you're receiving some type of tax incentive to be putting money in there. The trade-off is that with retirement accounts, you come with some restrictions. You know, Age 59 and a half is this golden number where until you reach age 59 and a half, if you take money out of that account, you're going to get penalized. Also, you may potentially get taxed as well. So, you know, those are where it's, you're kind of giving this concession of, all right, if I'm getting tax advantages, I know this money is locked up. Conversely, if you're looking outside of the retirement account picture, this is where you're working within a taxable structure. But this is where using certain types of investments can be very crucial. I know we were just talking about some fixed income sides, but one of the most popular things that we look at for California residents are municipal bonds. Whether that's national or state bonds, there's a potential to either eliminate state or federal taxes or even both. So that's where it's very important to understand the investment vehicle you're using in regards to the type of account your money's in, but also understanding what kind of investments are available to you. So that's really the first area. Other ones are just being understanding of what kind of tax implications come once you've made those first two steps. You know, something I see far too often is, well, people see their investment strategy working and they may want to take some profits, but they do it in such a short amount of time that they're going to be paying a higher tax rate. So knowing your difference between long-term capital gains, short-term capital gains, those are all various components that you need to really kind of have in the back of your mind when you're putting your money and what you're putting it into.
San Diego is sort of in a natural disaster area. Should people be setting aside money for, you know, wildfire risk, flooding risk? We saw some flooding happen due to historic rains. We're staring down the barrel of another storm this weekend. So, you know, should we be setting aside emergency funds? Should be setting aside those funds in a money market account? Or, you know, I mean, insurance coverage is also in the news right now, as lots of people are starting to lose their emergent disaster insurance. And so, what should we be considering emergency funds, and how should we be preparing?
You know, you're a pretty good interviewer when we're talking about, you know, ways to save on taxes, since we're in such a high tax state, and then we flip over to, we call it that sunshine tax, but yet we're getting all this rain and we're experiencing real seasons. It's like, what is going on?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually someone who I work very closely with, is experiencing that because they work in the insurance industry and they're like, what the heck is happening? Like, I understand that insurance companies need to evaluate what's profitable for them. But again, they're kind of making this jump where any signs of over disaster or kind of, an area where they're expecting more, they're not even going to offer it because they think the likelihood is too high of them having to pay money out to people who need it. You know, even though I don't believe that's a very morally sound value or, you know, morally sound strategy, that's their bottom line strategy. So, you know, of course, exploring your insurance options is absolutely option number one. Because when we talk about emergency funds, we're talking, you know, 3 to 6 months of expenses being covered.
Right.
You know, when we think about what our expenses look like, you know, that could be considerably less than whatever happens to your home, your vehicle. That is a massive, massive difference in regards to the amount of money going to expenses versus the amount of money going to potentially repairing your home.
Right.
So, you know, that is absolutely a consideration where if you're in one of these areas or one of these zones where you just cannot get any sort of coverage, then yes, you know, that 3 to 6 month rule, you can kind of just ball it up and throw it out the window. You know, you should be looking at a significantly higher amount based on where you're at and what kind of coverage that you do have access to. And if you don't, then yes, you know, padding that savings account as much as possible for what really depends on the amount of expense for your home, the property that you're on. Those are things that I think a lot of people don't go into extra detail about, because as much as I love where people's mindset and motivation are, where it's like, oh my gosh, you know, if I have cash on hand, it's not working for me. I need to invest it, which is great. but you absolutely should have, you know, not only the emergency fund squared away, but also the above and beyond for, you know, those particular people who just don't have the coverage in place through insurance.
We're going to start wrapping it up here, but I wanted to throw you one last question. It's bonus time in a few areas here in San Diego, and people are receiving, you know, sometimes more than 10K. What are some smart money moves to be doing with that kind of money?
So it's bonus time, your nice way of saying the tax return money, the little extra gift around this time of year?
No, because then my question would be, why are the taxes so high right now in California, and why am I not getting a refund?
Yes. You know, it's not the case for all of us, but I'll kind of spearhead it with the two sides of that. So, I think this is where there's a whole lot of options that you have. Of course, we just talked about emergency funds. Whether you kind of laid these questions out in a way to have a nice transition to, you know, use the next question to use a little bit of the last answer's ammo. I think that's great. But of course, we've seen inflation be very high for the past, 2.5 years, interest rates very high. Every dollar that we are spending is counting less and less to what we're buying. So that is easily the first stop that we should make, is let's take a look at our cash on hand. If we feel like it could use a little extra boost, let's use whatever that bonus was or whatever that return was to make sure that is properly funded. So that's step number one. Moving above and beyond that, this is where I think for, especially in the tech field, this is an area of opportunity that a lot of people tend to not realize, of how you can kind of mix and match where your income streams come from and ultimately where your savings are going. So one of my favorite strategies, especially for those who are looking to save on taxes with, you know, using these types of retirement accounts, is using that bonus as essentially your income and bumping up your 401k contributions. Because that way, you know, rather than using your typical W-2 salary for your contributions, you can actually bump them up for that month or the next 2 months so that you have extra money funneled into your 401k, which is a tax-advantaged account, whether that's pre-tax or after-tax. And that way you can actually get a jump start or do a little bit more savings than you would have expected. Some other things is, if you're kind of already on pace to max out your 401k, this is where looking at personal retirement accounts can also be very, very helpful. You know, looking at things that you can do outside of your employer, where you typically have more investment options to work with, also a little bit more control of your money, is fantastic. Again, this is a very fine line that we want to walk, because, you know, just earlier this morning, I was talking to someone who, they're like, hey, I'm maxing out my 401k. You know, I'm doing all sorts of retirement contributions from previous employers, all that stuff that's there. But I need to do something with my home. Like, I have an extra room that we are trying to build, and I don't want to borrow against my 401k. I don't want to pull money out where I know I'm going to get penalized and potentially taxed as well. So looking at non-retirement account options is also another great alternative. Just because, again, we live in California, and even if we didn't live in California, we would probably have to pay some taxes on this type of account based on growth, market growth, any profits that you capture. But there are strategies that you can do to reduce that. But at the end of the day, I use this very fun line that, you know, I'll always refer back to, is, hey, if we're paying taxes on money made, yes, it would be a better world if we didn't have to, but I'm glad that we made money and we're paying taxes for that reason. But above and beyond all of that, the reason why these accounts are important is that, well, rather than having to tap into a retirement account, rather than having to tap into, you know, cash on hand, this is where I kind of look at it as the middle point between your short term and your most liquid and probably your most secure accounts being your bank accounts. That's your short term. Your long term is your retirement accounts. Those have the tax advantages, but also plenty of restrictions, meaning we aren't touching those until we retire or until we're age 59 and a half. Well, What about this nice middle bucket? This is what I refer to as the opportunity fund. So that can be individual brokerage accounts, TOD accounts, trust accounts. Those are places where you can put money if you feel like you've really tapped everything for retirement. You're doing really well in terms of your savings of cash on hand. That little middle ground is a great area to continue being invested in the market, seeing some upside for or potential for upside, but also knowing that you have a way to access that money without the penalties that come with it.
Well, Jared, you've answered a lot of questions today. I really appreciate all of these really, really fascinating answers. I think the next topic I'd love to chat with you about is passive income. I know that a lot of people are talking about the role of passive income and how that can be a really great way to make money while you're working, you know, one job. So I'd love to talk to you more about that for our next session.
Yeah, most definitely. And as a little teaser, I know that whether you like it or not, you know, a lot of people kind of concentrate as passive income as being a real estate only thing.
And sure, sure.
I'll be the first one to say there is absolutely nothing wrong with investing in real estate. But in terms of the familiarity, in terms of the time invested, kind of what's required of you, there's a whole lot of components that go into it. So, you know, again, I'm never going to sit here and say, oh, real estate's a bad investment. You know, depending on what you're doing in that project or in that space, then it depends. But there's also so many other alternatives that you can work with that, you know, don't require you to also be a landlord, excuse me. So that'll definitely be a good area to start addressing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely, plus it's another way of funding, you know, your emergency fund or your vacation fund or you know, whatever special project or trip you have on the horizon.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much to everyone for joining us today. Really appreciate you taking the time to listen. And we will end it here. Since 1994, Tech San Diego has provided a unifying voice for San Diego's technology community, fostering growth and business acceleration through collaborations between industry, education, and government. We support members from all sectors of the technology industry, including cybersecurity, big data, robotics, SaaS, biotech, healthcare, Internet of Things, defense, telecom, and more. Learn more about us at www.techsandiego.org. This spotlight was hosted by me, Sarah Spiva, with our friend Jared Redfield, a great financial consultant for the San Diego region, specializing in the tech industry. Tidemark Financial Partners was founded on the idea that a steady approach always wins. They work with the long view in mind, making and executing well-thought-out plans in close collaboration with their clients. They offer years of experience in wealth and income management, tax planning, strategizing for retirement, estate planning strategies, and risk management. Their clients are individuals, families, and small business owners like you from a wide range of industries. To learn more, visit TidemarkFP.com. Producers for Tech San Diego Spotlight are Kevin Carroll and Sarah Spiva. TSD Spotlight is recorded remotely and edited by Hypable Impact. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, make sure to like, follow, and share.